You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, and welcome to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host. And today's business at hand is the business of becoming a commercial pilot for a top-tier company, in this case, Delta Airlines, and what it takes to become an elite pilot with the awesome responsibility for routinely taking off, flying under a wide range of conditions, and landing safely up and down, over and over. So I'm pleased to have as my guest today to give us an insider view of what it takes to become an elite commercial pilot, former Delta Captain Wayne Smith. Wayne, thanks for taking the time to come on the Business Hour.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, Wayne, let's go back because, like so many commercial pilots, you have a background as a military pilot. In your case, it was the Navy. And let's talk about how you came to join the Navy. And did you have a perception in advance that I'll join the Navy to become a pilot, or did you join the Navy and it was determined that you could be a pilot? Walk us through that process.
Sure. I applied, and I was interested in becoming a pilot. I really didn't want to do anything else, so I applied for that program, and it was accepted.
When was that in your the arc of your education and your career? Were you already a college student when you saw that that was something you might want to do?
Yes, I was a junior in college at the time, and I saw, I guess it was an ad in the paper or the magazine, and that piqued my interest. So I went down to the recruiter and said, "What do I need to apply?" And he told me the steps that I had to do, and, you know, started doing that. And next thing you know, I'm headed for Pensacola.
Well, you know, becoming a pilot in the military is a long shot. There are a lot of guys who enter almost all the branches with the hope that they could become a pilot, or in some cases with the intention only to be disappointed. But, you know, there are Marines, there are Army, there are, of course, Air Force, and there are Navy potential pilots. But walk us through that process, because one thing you had shared with me earlier was that you went down to Pensacola, that they wanted to make sure that you knew what you were getting into. They wanted to demystify and deglamorize, if you will, the position of Navy pilot, being a flyer. Tell us a little bit about that. What was that experience like?
Sure. Before they put any money and time into you, they wanted to make sure that you knew what you were getting yourself into. In the past, they had brought people down to Pensacola, and many of them would quit because they realized, hey, I'm not getting my jet on day one. You know, I have to go through all this rigmarole, you know, the marching, the studying, you know, this is not fun. This is a business. So they wanted to weed those people out that were not serious. And if you decided that what you saw the first trip and you said, yes, I can do this, then you came back after you graduated.
So now you're in the naval training program, and also one of the things you pointed out to me was that, you know, there was, you know, basic military training that they wanted to instill in you a sense of discipline. This was the military. So that there were a lot of things other than the romantic notion of getting to fly that were a part of that training. Let's talk about that training. And how long was it before, well, of course you went into the classroom, but how long was it before you actually got to be in the cockpit?
It was 4 months. You had to go through a 4-month school, and then you became commissioned as an officer. So during the 4 months, you were in the classroom for ground school, academic work, history, aeronautics, there was military training, marching, physical training, running, swimming, and so on. That took 4 months. Every day was something was planned, and you had very little downtime, so they kept you hopping.
Did you learn to parachute?
No, we did learn to. The most we ever did was they put us in the bay and dropped us behind a boat. You know, so how do you get out of a parachute once, if you ended up in the water? They didn't want to put all this money into you and then have you drown.
Right.
So they had you jump off like a 10-foot deck into the water, and then you had to release and get out.
I guess that since you weren't going to be an ongoing parachuter, you know, or a ranger, they didn't need you to be doing
definitely not.
Actual jumps. They probably could lose a lot of people that way, too. Now, let's talk about how that Navy training then prepared you to become a commercial pilot. Even before we talk about the commercial dimension, I want to talk a little bit about what kinds of aircraft you learned to fly in the Navy. And I also want to talk about that whole other side that was the romantic side of flying, because there must have been a point at which there you were in the cockpit, maybe not in the second chair, but actually flying the aircraft when you went, woohoo, I'm flying a jet airplane.
Well, I started out flying the T-28. It's a reciprocating engine. It's flying that as your first airplane, that quite a rush. I mean, it was a lot of power and somewhat daunting. But once you soloed, it was an exciting feeling to know that you did this all yourself. They do a great job at preparing you. It's just like learning any new skill. The small steps that leads to more and more steps and skills that you learn, and it just all becomes second nature almost.
Well, I remember when I had started to take private license lessons before I came to Atlanta. I was in a Cessna 210, and I remember the first time I got to take the controls, that it was both exhilarating and scary.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You do your first loop, and, you know, it's a wow. But, yeah, it becomes routine after a while, but still the sense of thrill never really leaves you.
Well, tell us a little bit about, as much as you can, about your tour and your mission and what kind of aircraft you were flying.
Well, in the Navy, I ended up flying P-3s, anti-submarine warfare. And at the time, during the Cold War, we were chasing after Soviet submarines, and that was a real-world mission, and it was exciting. Not only did you get to fly, but you also got to use your airplane as a platform. Essentially, that's what it was, to do the job, to complete the mission.
And tell us a little bit about that, because, and I'm going to ask, first, are we still using aircraft in the same way? Are we still
we still have
tracking
P-3s.
Submarines?
We still have P-3s, and now the follow-on to that is the P-8, which is a 737 variant, and they do that now. But they still have P-3s that they use.
Who makes a P-3?
Well, Lockheed. It was made by Lockheed. They don't make them anymore. I think I believe. Well, Lockheed has been bought out, I believe, but Lockheed made...
Lockheed Martin, I guess,
is
the larger company.
Lockheed Electra, the commercial version of it.
And so now it's a 737, is that what you just said?
Well, now they've slowly they're migrating over to the P-8, which is basically a 737.
So you've had a tour with the Navy, and... While you were a pilot with the Navy, did you look ahead? Did you think maybe I'll make this a career? Or were you looking ahead to when you were going to leave the Navy and that you might possibly have a career as a commercial pilot, because not all military pilots become commercial pilots. But walk us through how that evolved for you.
Well, it certainly is an option, but at first I thought, as long as I'm enjoying it, I'll stay in. But I think after my tour in P-3s, I ended up as a recruiter, and I decided then that, okay, I've had enough Navy, time to get out. But then I was not really looking at commercial aviation. In fact, I decided not to. I lived across the hall from two Air Force guys that had gotten out of the Air Force and flew at the time for Pupil Express. And they said, hey, we'll give you a recommendation if you're interested. Well, I thought about it, but I decided I didn't want to go that route. And I ended up working, doing a corporate job for a year and a half.
Now, why would anyone not want to become something which the general population has a very positive image of, even, again, that romantic image of a guy who gets to fly and is paid reasonably well? We probably weren't as aware of the fact that maybe not everyone's paid reasonably well.
Yeah, you have to look a little bit more deep into that. I had a guy that would come in. He was a reservist when I was recruiting, and he would come in and drill one couple days a month. And he was also a P-3 pilot, and he had worked for Eastern Airlines for 14 years. And he said in that 14 years, he had been furloughed three times. So that got me to thinking, like, you know, it's not a secure job. You know, if you have a family and now all of a sudden you're furloughed, you have to scramble for an income. So that part was something to think about. And I figured, well, let me, rather than do that, I think I'll go the corporate route. So I did that for a year and a half. But I also kept my hand in flying. I joined the reserves once I got off active duty. And that kind of another opportunity opened. The CEO of the squadron was a Delta pilot. And he said, Delta's starting to hire. And there were about maybe three or four pilots that were not commercial pilots in my unit. And so I applied, a couple others applied, and next thing you know, I'm on my way to Atlanta.
And were you in Pensacola at the time?
No, I was working upstate New York.
So as you fly different aircraft in the military and then later commercially, for every new aircraft, is there a lot of training involved? Are you in a simulator initially?
Yeah, there's ground school. You go to ground school, you learn the systems, and it's changed. I mean, now it's more computer-based. But at the time, you had an instructor come up, and you would go over all the systems of the airplane. Then you would get into the simulator. After that, it would take about a month. So you would go through the ground school, then go through the simulators, then go on the line and, you know, with a pilot to check you out. And then once you're qualified, you're good to go. So you operate on the line.
And you go through this process with
every airplane
aircraft
that you move up to, you go through that process.
We're going to be taking a break, and we're going to have Wayne tell us more about his experience in transitioning from the military into a commercial pilot. We're here with Wayne Smith, a former captain with Delta Airlines. We're going to get an insider view of what it takes to become a pilot and what the life of a pilot is like on the job. We'll be back right after this break.
45 years of experience is behind the most trusted name in auto transportation. Passport Transport, the first and finest today. That's why Passport Transport is the preferred auto transport for major auto manufacturers, concours, museums, tours, and collectors, and should be your choice from across the state to across the country. When you have the need, go to PassportTransport.com and enjoy the peace of mind referenced experience will give you. Passport Transport.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on americaswebradio.com.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with Wayne Smith, a former captain with Delta Airlines, and we've been talking about his career as a commercial pilot, but we began the program talking about his military training as a naval pilot, and it brought to mind a story, and Wayne, you can tell me what your experience was, but I once met both an instructor and a student. Coincidentally, it was at a party with Delta people. There were a number of pilots at this party. Off in the corner, kind of quietly, were these kind of a early 20-somethings guy and a mid-30s guy. And I went over and I said, "Hey, you know, what's the story? You guys aren't out there mingling with everybody. Are you guys pilots?" And the young guy and said very modestly, "Well, no, I'm a student, and this is my instructor." And I said, "Really?" I said, "Well, where are you a student?" He said, "I'm with the Air Force in Texas." And I said, "Well, how did you end up here?" And he said, "I needed to get in log some time, and my instructor who knew some of these pilots said, let's fly to Atlanta." And I said, "You just flew here to Atlanta?" He goes, "Yeah, we went to Charlie Brown Airport, and we'll be leaving in the morning." And I said, "Wow, that's kind of an exotic notion of putting in some time by just flying to a nearby town."
So this guy was he was on a cross country, I take it.
Yes.
And, oh yeah, that's fairly common. I mean,
and you're putting in hours, so
yeah,
you're just
you have to build your hours up, and so yeah, you can take the airplane for a weekend and go somewhere, and you know, it's just not a joyride. I mean, you're shooting approaches, you're building time and experience. So yeah, it's valuable training.
Well, there's no question about it. I would imagine it was valuable training, but in this case, I think it played right into my fantasy of the romantic notion of being able to fly and just check out the... I think he might have been in a T-33. Would that be one of the
no, that's training? That's an Air Force. He could have been in a T-33 or T-37. It depends on how long ago that was. Could have been a T-33, a T-37, or a T-38.
Yeah, I think at the time it was several years back, and I think he said it was a T-38. And they, in fact, invited me out to, if I wanted to come out to Charlie Brown Airport, which for listeners outside of Atlanta or outside the country, there's an airport that's on the edge of the city of Atlanta. And it's a private, small airport. Obviously, there's clearance for military aircraft. But they said, "Yeah, we're expecting a cloud ceiling, so we're going to do close to vertical takeoff, and we want to practice that maneuver of punching through the clouds. You say you want to come over, it'll, you know, you won't see us for very long, but it'll be kind of dramatic."
Sounds like a little showboating, maybe.
Yeah, no question about it. It was the instructor who was saying, "Sure. You know, I'm going to take him through that maneuver." And because the young kid was a very modest, and in fact, I've always come to regard most military pilots, even though there can be some guys that are maybe a bit cavalier, I think a lot of pilots have come to have respect for the position of being an American military pilot that is responsible for keeping America safe and being in this position where you're flying a multi-million dollar aircraft, no matter what the aircraft is. And certainly as you move up in the ranks and you're flying larger and larger aircraft, you are flying multi-million dollar aircraft. And I kind of like to think that the military in general, but particularly our pilots, are overgrown Boy Scouts, you know, with all the right properties of a good Boy Scout. And this kid, I remember, he was modest, and yet he had a certain confidence. And I think you have those same qualities, Wayne. I've known you for actually a few years, and I think you have always been respectful and appreciative that you got a chance to fly as a military pilot. And so now we're transitioning to your time with Delta Airlines. And as you said, you applied directly to Delta, so you didn't spend time at a small airline company. You got to go work with a giant. And tell us about any training that went into preparing you for flying with Delta. And were they, at first, were they shorter regional flights?
No, not at all. You start out, I started out as a 727 flight engineer. This is back in the mid-80s. And you go through ground school just like anywhere else. You start at the beginning. You are already a trained pilot, so they know you're trainable and they can work with that. And they particularly liked military guys at the time because they were disciplined. So you start out at ground school. You go to the simulator after that. Then you go to the line with a training captain, and you go through a rotation or two, and then once you successfully complete that, then you fly the line.
I'd never thought about this, but are you putting in time as well in the actual aircraft before you have passengers? Are there flights that you have?
Once you're qualified through the simulator, then you go with a training captain or first officer, whatever the case happened to be, and he follows you, and you have paying customers on board. So you're already qualified because you get your qualification via the simulator.
I see. You sort of addressed this when we talked about the first time you got to fly, but as a commercial pilot, because the aircraft are considerably larger, is that correct, with the 727?
Yeah, a little larger, but an airplane is an airplane, and similarities for all of them. So, yeah, you have the basics down, and, you know, it's just another airplane.
Was there any excitement to having your first flight? Again, a daunting task in that you are responsible for the safety of what could be hundreds of passengers, but at the same time, you're getting to do something which, again, the rest of us on the outside see as exciting. Do you have an opportunity to have fleeting moments of excitement?
Oh, sure. The takeoff and the landings were always exciting. I mean, you always got a rush from doing that. It never got old for me.
So, and then eventually I would imagine that there is a point where there's a certain routineness, might not be the right word, but you do you have acquired skills so that you know that you're going to be able to take off and land with relative ease. And in that sense, would you say
it becomes routine? Sure, it does become routine in a way because you've done it so many times that it's just a second nature to you. And it's...
Do you have to prepare your mind to adopt a mindset of staying cool under a variety of circumstances?
Well, yes, you always have to be mentally prepared, especially what happens if. What do you do? What's your plan B? What's your plan C? You always remember to fly the airplane, navigate in communication just like they taught you back in flight school in the Navy or wherever you learned. It's always fly the airplane first, navigate, and then talk about it.
Are the major factors that you have to be somewhat or very prepared for mechanical failure, the weather, and these days terrorism is a real aspect to have to be concerned with, probably much less when you started, but tell us a little bit about how you prepare for the possibility of mechanical failure, for extreme weather, and for acts of terrorism, and we'll start with mechanical failure.
Sure. Before every flight, you do cover a brief. You brief the flight attendants. You brief the other pilots. This is what you do in case of this. It doesn't have to be overly long, but it's thorough, just so that everyone is on the same page. And this is, you know, you're trained from... You know, we go to the simulator every 7 months, 7 to 9 months, and they constantly drill that. Your contingencies, emergencies, abnormal situations, things that you hope you never see on the line, but if you do, you know, you can handle it.
Things like, we're still talking about mechanical failure, or in today's world, you have such sophisticated avionics that it could be electronic failure. And really, that's got to be a situation where you can have faulty, in the past, maybe electromechanical instrumentation, but these days, programming. And we know that that's been a question in a couple of situations over the last couple of years is problems related to software. Do you actually spend time in the simulator practicing one engine out, two engines out,
all the time?
All engines out?
Well, you only have two engines. Usually, I think Delta only has two engine airplanes now. So yeah.
There's a few with three, right?
Not anymore. We got rid of all.
Okay.
Those. Yeah, it's just... Just about every time you practice a losing an engine on takeoff, you know, just at the point where you have to go flying. If you lose an engine early on in the takeoff roll, you stop on the runway. After a certain speed, you have to go flying, and they want to see how you handle that.
We're going to be taking a break here, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you about how you prepare and whether or not you had any experience with extreme weather conditions, and maybe have you touch on a little bit on what currently they're doing to train pilots for acts of terrorism, which has become more of a reality than ever before. We're here with Wayne Smith, a former captain with Delta Airlines. He's been sharing with us an insider view of what it's like to be a commercial airline pilot and an insider view of that whole career. We'll be back with Wayne right after this break.
Your auto love and investment demands the best, and for 45 years, Passport Transport has been meeting those demands. From manufacturers to the one-car collectors and all other facets of the auto industry and antique auto hobby. The first and the finest with unequaled service and peace of mind. Passport Transport, your auto transportation company. Contact PassportTransport.com with your need today. Passport Transport.
Quick Stakes, that's Q-U-I-K Stakes, are not just for surveyors. They are great for family and community gardens. Go online to www.quickstake.com or contact your local land surveying supply dealer and get you a box of Quick Stakes. You'll love them every year when you plant your garden. Again, that's Quick Stakes, Q-U-I-K Stakes, the truly preferred way to stake and identify what's in your garden now.
This is Ron Camacho, host of the Business Hour, on Fridays from 10 to 11 a.m. Join me as I talk with passionate professionals on a program that profiles the best businesses, business practices, and fascinating business professionals to get an insider view of how America works. The Business Hour, from 10 to 11 a.m. on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host, and today we're with Wayne Smith, a former Delta Airlines captain, and he's been sharing with us an insider view of what it's like to be a pilot in general, but specifically to fly for a large commercial airline. And we talked about his military background and how his training with the Navy prepared him to become a commercial pilot. And in some sense, what you learned in the Navy were all of the basics of aviation that some of today's pilots who aren't taking the path of the military on their way to becoming a commercial pilot, they're learning that at places like the Emory-Riddle School for aviation. Before the break, we were talking about how they prepare you for such things as mechanical failures, which, as I mentioned today, might be an electronic or programming, you know, a computer glitch that leads to a problem with flying the aircraft. But also, I wanted to hear you talk about extreme weather. Wind shear being, I guess, one of the most prominent possibilities. Have you ever had to fly in what you would consider extreme weather, and tell us about the training for that?
Well, no, you try to avoid extreme weather. That you use your radar to avoid that. You talk to the controllers to see what the ride is like ahead of you, and you listen to the airplanes ahead of you. They'll report turbulence, clear air turbulence, or whatever, and you take that in, and you do your best to avoid it, because you remember the people in the back, they want a smooth ride. You know, many of them are fearful flyers, and you want them coming back, so.
But in many cases, Wayne, there wasn't necessarily a way to anticipate wind shear, which, you know, virtually came out of nowhere. And particularly with pop-up storms, which you don't find in a lot of other parts of the country and not necessarily all over the world, they literally just pop up.
There are indications when you're flying Virgif, that's rain that doesn't go all the way to the ground. You look at your instruments, and if you see your airspeed increasing or your vertical speed increasing, decreasing, there are signs, and you do your best to avoid.
Can you get up above many storms?
Usually not. Sometimes thunderstorms go above 50,000 feet, and we can't fly above that. So you want to do your best to go around to avoid it completely. But talking about wind shear, they load the profiles in the simulator, wind shear profiles, and they will fly you through that, so you know what to do. It just becomes automatic. You know, recognizing when you're in a wind shear and getting out of it.
Let's turn to terrorism. A few decades back, we started to experience more hijackings. Now we have hijackings with a terrorism component. Do the commercial airlines address that? Are there specific
yes,
sessions?
Yes, they do. That's a very serious consideration and something that you have to be cognizant of. You talk about it, you brief it, and they do take
considerable measures.
Sure. I mean, the cockpit doors are hardened. I don't want to go too much into that because, you know,
right.
We know who's listening.
We don't want to divulge too much about that. But also, flight attendants, I would imagine, have been trained.
Everyone is briefed, yes. Everyone is trained.
Different kinds of aircraft in the commercial spectrum, and in fact, you had mentioned to me that you had flown 727s, DC-9s, MD-88s, Boeing, Douglas, and 767 is the aircraft that you most recently flew. So for each of those aircrafts, more time in the simulator?
Yes. Always, you're always in the simulator. Every 9 months, you go to the simulator. If there's just a difference in training, you know, to go from the 76-300 to the 76-400, you go to a different school. And that may involve a week of ground school and maybe five simulator rides. It depends. It varies.
I know that you flew to South America and to Europe regularly recently, but you didn't start off flying those routes, did you?
Oh, no. You start out flying domestically, and then you go from there to put a bid in to fly internationally. You start out when doing that. Some people don't like the jet lag involved in international flying. Yes, it is hard on the body. You know, multiple time zone changes, flying a lot of backside of the clock hours. You know, you're up 2, 3, 4 in the morning when normally you should be sleeping. That does take a toll on the body.
Yeah, I would imagine it's a lot like being a fireman. Maybe a little less hectic in that you're not always called in the middle of your sleep cycle, even though it's disrupted by getting up really early at dark 30, if you will, so that you could maybe approach a normal, if you can call it that, go to bed early to get up early, whereas if you're a fireman, it didn't matter. You could be awakened once or twice, three times in the middle of the night, but I would imagine
it's always a possibility.
It's a situation a lot like with the sleep cycles for firefighters. Did it bring you comfort knowing that you worked for a large commercial airline like Delta? That, you know, I've always had the impression, and I also got the opportunity to tour one of the maintenance hangars, maintenance facilities. But I had the impression even before I saw firsthand that there was this really top-notch, like I would know otherwise, but what appeared to be a surgical operation for maintaining the aircraft. It's got to bring a little measure, maybe a lot of a measure of comfort knowing you work for an airline that puts the emphasis on maintenance the way Delta does and also has the resources. Because it doesn't matter if you have it as a high priority, but you don't have the resources to put the manpower in to buy the parts and to keep the planes mechanically sound.
Well, yeah, it is a comfort, and they do a professional job. And it's most airlines, though, they do have to comply with the FAA and the Federal Air Regulations. So, yeah, they're all going to meet the minimum safety standards. But I think Delta is... I'm partial to Delta. They do a fantastic job in keeping the airplanes airworthy.
Yeah, my impression is that they're as good as any airline in the world. You know, there's various ratings that airlines get for the experience overall, but in terms of safety and in terms of maintaining the aircraft and in terms of the overall quality of the flights, I have the impression that it's a lot of top-notch people, both on the flight side, pilots, attendants, the mechanical engineering and maintenance, and you know, you can't have that without the suits being pretty sharp as well. I'm going to go back and ask you a little bit about airports themselves. I would think that some airports are a little bit more of a challenge to land and take off in. Maybe it's become routine for you, but do you, as part of your training, do they have simulations for avoiding that big statue in Rio de Janeiro?
Oh, that's not anywhere. you fly by that.
I'm just joking.
You want to avoid all of that. But yeah, you follow their approaches, and that has a safe area where you stay on the approach, and you know.
Has GPS technology made it so much easier?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we are doing navigation, satellite navigation approaches, and that's something that fairly recent.
Tell me about geese, about birds in much the same manner as Captain Sully Sullenberger had to land his U.S. Airways flight 1549, put it down into the Hudson. I've heard from pilots that birds in the engines can be a real problem, and in the case of that flight 1549, did you ask yourself, do all pilots kind of ask themselves, well, I wonder how I would have dealt with that?
Of course, that's just sure they all do that. And first of all, he did a fantastic job. He landed, ditched the airplane in the Hudson River and lost no people, and that's incredible.
Yeah, in your opinion, he deserves all the recognition for that. Have you ever encountered a flock of birds?
Oh, yeah. I've had bird strikes before, and, you know, that just comes with the territory. Birds fly as well as we do, and you hope that they miss you, but sometimes they don't. If they end up in the engine, yes, they can do major damage.
We're going to be taking a break again. We've been talking with Wayne Smith, a former captain with Delta Airlines, about his career, a long career with Delta Airlines, from which you recently retired. And when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about whether or not there are other aircraft you wished you could fly, either fighter planes or other commercial aircraft. We'll continue to talk with Wayne and get an insider view of what it's like to be a pilot in a large commercial organization and just as a pilot in general right after this break.
You can keep your doctor, you can keep your plan, and every family will save thousands of dollars a year. I'm Ellen Deal, and if you've been hurt by the Affordable Care Act, you can email maga45cag@gmail.com to see if we can help. Small business owners, individuals, families, and baby boomers. Email maga45cag@gmail.com for three easy questions to determine if you can get away from Obamacare. I'm a 20-year veteran of the insurance industry and here to help you for all your insurance needs.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, You probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with Wayne Smith, a former captain and pilot with Delta Airlines, from which he recently retired, and we've been getting an insider view of his career as a pilot, as a commercial pilot with a large airlines company, and his military background that laid the foundation for his career as a pilot. I also want to take a moment to give a tip of the hat to Marty Rogers, who was also going to be with us, who flew with Delta Airlines but wasn't able to make it today. We did have Marty on the program some years back to tell us a little bit about his career and also his time working as a tour guide in Glacier Park, which was a fascinating new direction to take for Marty. I want to get back to flying, and you know, before the break, I asked if there were aircraft that you wish you might have had a chance to fly. And as a civilian, some years back when I was at the Paris Air Show, and I got to see this incredible range of aircraft. And I do mean incredible range, you know, from the bi-wing aircraft that were doing aerobatic shows to, you know, the B-1 bomber to some pretty sexy foreign-made aircraft. You know, the Koreans are, you know, entering that market. The Europeans have that Rafale. Fighter plane, and did you ever want to, or do you sometimes look at some of these exotic aircraft much the same way that car drivers look at exotic cars and think, boy, that would be fun to fly?
Yeah, I think it would be fun. A lot of those airplanes, I think now, though, my idea of fun is, I think being a bush pilot up in Alaska would be
in a plane that you can really fly.
Sure, yeah. That would be, yeah, I mean, affordable, and it's, Alaska's beautiful. The scenery is just, yeah, that would be fantastic.
Well, you know, that isn't out of the question because you're a relatively young man as retirees go. So flying
I'm in the Giza hood, yes.
Well, but flying a bush plane, in fact, let's talk about that for just a moment. Assuming you wanted to fly a bush plane, I would imagine you can rent one, so to speak. I don't know if they have rent a bush plane, but there's got to be sources where they just want to make sure you're a qualified pilot. Would you have to spend a little time training?
Oh, yeah, you get checked out in one and then go fly. It can't be that difficult, I mean. You know, after having gone through all the training at Delta and the Navy prior to that, so yeah, it's feasible.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be a cheerleader for you to go ahead and do that sometime. We'll give you 10 years to check that off your bucket list. What did you study in high school and college?
I was a biology major. Wanted to become an oceanographer. Grew up watching Jacques Cousteau, and I just was intrigued by the ocean and just the scuba diving, and I found it fascinating. So that's what I plan to do, but sort of got sidetracked.
Well, you know, there's a common thread here, and that is a sense of adventure. Although you downplay the romance and the adventure side of being a pilot, just because you're the consummate professional who views it like a job, and because as a commercial pilot, but even as a Navy pilot, you know, you have responsibility for the aircraft and anyone on the aircraft, but as a commercial pilot, you have the responsibility for the lives of hundreds of people. In fact, when you see incidences like we have with various downed aircraft and the flight of the U.S. Airways 1549 was Captain Sullenberger putting it down the Hudson, you're reminded of that responsibility. I guess you don't spend a lot of time lingering on the responsibility for the lives of many, but maybe fleeting thoughts? Ever?
Well, no, it's an awesome responsibility, something that you're well aware of, and you just do the best you can. You've got a great team supporting you. And
now, you were also one of very few African-American pilots or a person of any color when you began with the Navy. When you reported to Pensacola, did you find that you were one of very few?
Yeah, in fact, I was the only one in my class.
So you,
but I never let that deter me from trying something that I wanted to. You know, the worst could happen was you fail and you do something else. But if you don't try, you're not going to get anywhere.
And in fact, again, because you've approached this so professionally, it's either something you're going to succeed at or not. And if there were any hurdles to get over discrimination-wise, I would imagine you just handled them matter-of-factly, routinely,
sure,
and moved ahead. But have you ever reflected on how you had, like, the Tuskegee Airmen that kind of paved the path?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's what they went through was incredible, and I figured anything that I go through is simple compared to what they went through. So, yes, they did, and I am grateful for them for finding a pathway.
Yeah, it's quite an amazing group of pilots, and their story has been told in a few different versions. I would encourage anyone who wants to learn more to, you know, get a hold of one of the movies or read a book. What advice would you offer? Because we talked about the military as one direction that you could take where you could become a pilot and get top-notch training. You have programs like Emory-Riddle. Are there many programs like the Emory-Riddle program down in Florida?
Yeah, there are more and more. And if I were to do it all over again, I think I would go through the civilian way now. I wasn't aware of it at the time. Plus, the cost was prohibitive. Now, it's still expensive, but many universities have aviation programs. You know, Auburn has one. I know Purdue, University of North Dakota. They're all around the country. I would go through that and build your hours, become an instructor, go on to a regional after that, and then move up to the airlines. It's a lot quicker time to the major airlines going that route as opposed to the military. The military, the obligatory period after your wings has gone up, I think it's 10 years now. When I was in the Navy, it was 4.5 years after flight school. So it's gone from 4.5 years to 9 or 10 years. I'm not exactly sure. That's a long time to think about and obligate yourself for. Usually if it's in the military, you're halfway to retirement, so oftentimes they'll just stay in for the retirement.
And is that something that you had thought about for even a moment?
Staying, it was a possibility, it was an option, but always keep your options open. And I decided at the 8-year mark was a good time to get out. I stayed in the reserve, so. But.
I'm going to turn to a whole other dimension here because, you know, most people that are successful, I shouldn't say most, but it may be more than 51% of successful professionals have the support system. And I know, I want to give a tip of the hat to Alice, your wife. I know she is a source of tremendous support, and you grew up with two lovely daughters. Has that always been this source of strength, or did palpable support in your life?
Oh, absolutely. My family was my rock, so to speak. Anytime I had hard times, I mean, they were there to support me, encourage me, and that is what I needed, you know, because no one can do it by themselves. And just to have their encouragement and their, you know, it could have been just a letter, it could have been a phone call that said, you know, keep at it, you know, you can do it. That made a huge difference.
How long have you been with Alice?
Oh, we've been married 35 years. So I met her in the Navy. She was a Navy nurse. So I have to be very grateful for what the Navy...
Oh, yeah. Well, nurses are a special breed unto themselves, caring, giving, knowledgeable professionals who can take care of you for the rest of your life. So another tip of the hat. Well, maybe she'll hear it. Well, Wayne, I want to thank you for taking the time to be on the Business Hour.
Thank you, Ron. It's been my pleasure.
We've been listening to Wayne Smith, former Delta Airlines captain, sharing with us the insider view of the career of a pilot recently retired. You've been listening to Business Hour here on America's Web Radio. We're on Fridays from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on the radio and Internet next week.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.